So there's a couple of things going on. First of all, I read this op-ed and I didn't even read. It was from The Blaze. I didn't read who wrote it. It was Biden hasn't been investing in America. He's been killing the middle class. And I'm reading it and I get down to the last part and I'm like, we've got to get this person on. And then I see at the bottom, Carol Roth, her new book, You Will Own Nothing. Carol, we have like mind melded some way or another. Take us through your op-ed that's on The Blaze.
Yeah, I think we're spending a lot of time together on air, Glenn. Yeah. So we're starting to think the same way. So, Biden launches this plan for reelection and talks about how he's been investing in America. And all I can think about is the fact that we cannot quite literally afford another 4 years of Biden, because he and his cronies, they've been making themselves out to be champions of the middle class. Mm-hmm. But all they've done is decimate the middle class. If you think about what's happened since day one with his energy policy, not only making direct energy costs more expensive, but all of the ancillary products that go along with that. The inflation that has happened under his watch, 40-year historic inflation that we are still contending with, that is a real cost to families. Things like hiring IRS agents to go after not the billionaires. You don't have $80 billion to go after the 800 billionaires, but obviously to go after the middle class. ESG doubling down on the fact that they want to prioritize their investments and the things that they're interested in politically over your investment return. On and on and on. And then he talks about the fact that he's been fiscally responsible. Not only has he run up substantial deficits, but for this fiscal year, the first half of it, we have a $1.1 trillion deficit, not spending, but a deficit that hasn't been paid for just the first half of the year.
For six months. So let's say this and then pause for a minute. In 6 months, we have spent more money than we had to the tune of $1.1 trillion.
And there is no emergency going on. They can't hide this under, oh, it's COVID or there's something special. This is just the trajectory of spending that they are putting us on the path to. And, you know, we're having this argument over the debt ceiling and how we're going to finance all of this debt that we have. The reality is that nobody in the world wants our debt anymore. There's no demand for our debt. In fact, big countries like China are actually getting rid of our debt. Investors are, you know, maybe on a short-term basis will invest, but there's not trillions of dollars of demand every year for new debt. So the only buyer that is going to exist for the debt is the Federal Reserve. And that means that they are going to, on an ongoing basis into the future, be the ones that have to buy the debt, which means they're going to continue to devalue your dollar. They're going to keep inflation as a part of your life. And this is part of the entire plan to make sure that they come out smelling like a rose and you own nothing.
I'm doing a special on conspiracy theories tonight and how, all of them turn out to be conspiracy facts. But when it comes to finance, there are a lot of people that are just pounding the drum, and it's almost, I think it is actually evil, because so many people will be unprepared when it finally hits. But I said back in 2009, the Fed will begin to buy our debt, and they said it will never happen. And I said, it's coming. It is coming. So now they're doing that. Now, they also said that the dollar would never collapse. And I have heard really smart broadcasters say this talk of the dollar being, you know, dumped as the king dollar is nonsense. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be devalued. We've already gone from 73% in 2001 of being everybody's gold standard, 73% of all of the I guess you would call them sovereign funds, where they're holding the wealth,
Reserve currencies.
Thank you. Yes. The reserve currencies. That was the U.S. dollar. We're down now to 47%. And we have gained speed on losing it 10 times faster than the last decade. This is a problem.
Yes, you took the words out of my mouth. The acceleration of the dumping of the dollar on the world stage is pretty staggering. Now, you know, we always go back to the fact that we are the cleanest shirt in the laundry or the skinniest kid at fat camp. You know, we still have a very resilient population who is very productive on a relative basis to the rest of the world, and a lot of good things that are happening. And frankly, that is what is backing our dollar on the international stage. It's not the faith in the government that they're going to do the right thing, as they like to say, is the fact that we have this productive population as well as a military. But, you know, over time, certainly there are a lot of actors that are looking to shift the alliance. So even if it's not the dollar goes away, it just becomes one of several different reserves that are being used. It completely changes the equation for us, Glenn, because one of the biggest privileges, that there are a lot of cons with being the reserve currency, but sure, one of the biggest privileges is the fact that we get an arbitrage opportunity. It keeps our debt artificially low. And that has allowed the U.S. government to finance their expansion and become unwieldy at a very low cost of capital on the back of basically everybody in the world, which they're not very happy about. If that goes away, that's what's called the exorbitant privilege, then that means, again, it becomes more expensive to finance the debt, which theoretically you would think is a red flag to the government. You know, as the Fed raises interest rates, as it becomes more expensive for the government to finance debt, it should be a signal to say, okay, well, we've got to stop spending.
Right.
And what are they doing? They are accelerating spending. This is a fiscal runaway train, and it is going to derail if we do not do something to stop.
This is exactly like if you own a house and you bought your house at 0% and you've been buying them for 0% and you just start stacking up houses and you really can't afford them. And then the interest rate goes up to 8% and you're on an adjustable mortgage here. You didn't lock it in. So it goes up to 5%, 8%, 10%. And you accelerate the amount of houses and how fast you're buying houses. Instead, anyone with reason would stop buying houses. They would reduce their debt, not continue to not only pile on debt, but increase the volume and the speed of accumulating that debt. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It is crazy. And what we're asking for shouldn't be a big shift. If you think about how much the government took in quote unquote revenue, which is, you know, primarily our tax dollars last year, it was a hair shy of $5 trillion. They had $5 trillion that they could have spent and not gone into an extra deficit that needed to be financed with debt. If you roll back to 2018 and 2019, they spent at those levels. I mean, that's not very long ago, that we would have a surplus that they could use to pay down the debt and try to get us on track. But they don't care because this is not part of the plan. This is not part of the new financial world order where the stakes are shifting. They see that the stakes are shifting. And instead of trying to do the right thing and stopping them, they're giving into human nature. They're giving into greed and power. They're going to try to get everything for themselves. And in the process, as I've said before, you will own nothing.
So here is the reality of America that if you're not living it, you need to know about it. McDonald's now says they're having a problem because they've raised their prices due to inflation and everything else. A McDonald's meal now is $9. One McDonald's meal. They're saying people are downsizing even more than they already have downsized. And there's no stimulus money. There's nothing coming. So people are starting to really live on the edge. This isn't good. And then on top of it, if anybody thought our banking crisis was over, can you tell me what's happening with First Republic today?
So, you know, as we talked about before, there's certainly, you know, we didn't think that we were going to be out of the woodwork when it came to bank crises. And one of the things that I did, which I can share in a tweet, I think I've sent over to you, is I kind of plotted out some of what I call the lowlights, because I can't call them highlights, of the Great Recession financial crisis. And it really does kind of show in a staggering detail, you know, how long it took for things to play out. And so we really are probably still in somewhat early innings, maybe a third or getting close to halfway through what could possibly happen if history indeed rhymes. But what happened with First Republic, in a sense, is not dissimilar to what happened with Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. And certainly they have not yet collapsed. But as they reported their financial results, they let us know that in the last quarter, 40% of deposits exited that particular company, even though they had gotten a cash infusion, a massive cash infusion from 11 different banks. And all of this is the outgrowth of the Fed policy of not having the market make decisions, but of this indulgent, negligent Fed policy that just put too much money into the market that couldn't be handled. Now, every bank did something a little bit different. If you had Signature Bank, it was on the crypto side, and Silicon Valley Bank, they put too much into treasuries. It was different for First Republic because they were making loans out to wealthy people who basically said, oh, I can get all this money in the stock market. Maybe I'll take a 1% mortgage out on my house. And now they're sitting around with mortgages that, you know, are paying them less than the, what they have to pay for deposits. So it's not a good situation. But again, it's engendered by Fed policy.
Yeah, and we're not done here.